welcome to Is This Good? The show where we boldly, conclusively, and scientifically decide what things in this big wide world are good. I'm Ed Austin, and with me as always is production powerhouse Jason Doyle.
Hello.
Hi, JD. Thanks for coming. And today's guest is a man at work who left his crowded house to burn the midnight oil as he traveled to in excess of 20 countries hunting and collecting international basketball
stories. Ooh, I like that one.
And even though it's really good to see ya, I will offer this slim, dusty, bad seed no favor as he steps into my savage garden. Please welcome the one and only international man of mystery, Lee Ellis. Lee, welcome back to Is
man,
This Good?
Hunters and collectors, man, you're going back. I'm surprised you even knew them, really, because they were big in Melbourne, especially in the early 90s, early to mid-90s, but didn't think they had much traction beyond Australia. So shout out to
well, they absolutely did not. I think it was just that I went to summer camp where there was like Australian counselors there, so they would force their music upon us. And actually, I don't know if you remember this, but I'm pretty sure Eddie Vedder did a cover of Throw Your Arms Around Me. Ooh. I don't know if it was like with them on stage or but that was a bootleg going around in the LimeWire era.
You surely have your powder finger on the button.
I was going to try to work that in there, but I know that, you know, you don't want to talk about your rampant cocaine use, so I didn't want to bring up powder finger.
Well, you know, he is a hoodoo guru of music.
Oh, my God. This is, wow. It's back even further. You've got the right time, JD. I'll say that.
All right. So let's not spend all show naming Australian bands. Let's go over, you know, where we are, how we got here. So, Lee, as you know, I was your colleague for many years at The Score at NBA TV. We worked together. You would often refer to me as your best friend, your treasured counsel. And we were working together. Then after NBA TV, you were in No Dunks. But then in October 2023, you shocked the NBA world when you said, "This league is a hunk of shit, it's boring, and I'm better than most of these players." So you announced you would be leaving the show to play 20 games of pickup basketball in 20 cities, in 20 countries. You were here on the show in August 2023. I don't remember exactly how many countries you'd been to at that point, but we had to have you back because you have completed your journeys. You've played 20 games of pickup basketball in 20 cities, in 20 countries. He's popping that shirt. Don't you dare try to sell merch on this show.
I wouldn't try to sell this, Matt. Just go to breakingtea.com. They sell the merch.
Okay. Well, if you want to buy merch for this show, all you have to do is go to isthisgoodpod.com, and it automatically redirects you to the Breaking Tea site where you can buy the Is This Good shirt. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I didn't know if you could do it. I didn't even know there were 20 countries, to be honest. and you've done it. I guess, first of all, how does it feel?
It's quite a satisfying feeling. You know, when I set out, 20 was really just a sort of ballpark target. You know, it was like, can I get to 10? You know, on my goals board at home, I had 10 by the end of 2023. I was like, if I can get to 10, that'll be good. But ultimately, it was only going to continue if I got interest from around the world, from people inviting me to come out and you know, say, hey, come out and play, come to my city, come to my country. And if that was going to happen, then it was more likely to happen. And that happened and continues to happen in abundance. I think we did say, I'm sure I said last time, like the amount of people who reference the starters, the Basketball Jones, you know, still people remember many things of the Basketball Jones. And then, of course, No Dunks, and they relate to various, you know, parts of the show or their, you know, their favorite person or whatever and their favorite segment. And that never stops anywhere I go. I mean, people have incredible memories of something, whether it was reference to a moment in their life when they were listening to the show or watching the show. Some people dip in the show and then they dip out and they come back a couple of years later, whatever. And so it's awesome to go down memory lane no matter where I am with people and listen to what the show has meant to them and what I've meant and what, you know, the various other you know, you guys have meant to people as well. So It's crazy to be in some of the cities that I've been in, and people are talking about, you know, again, the Tweet of the Week Army, that, you know, things that maybe reference or relate closer to me. And they talk about
it. So your favorite parts of the trip were people telling you about all the great things you did?
No, I mean, not just me, but of course people, you know, they have a story, you know, more likely.
I've traveled all around the world.
But,
you know, hear people say wonderful things about me.
Yeah, so, no, it's great. I mean, it's just great. It certainly has reinforced my belief of what it could have been when I set out. But now it's also really shown me that it can be a whole lot more too.
Well, okay. So last time you were on, I remember talking about, obviously we know the basis of this is you go to a city in a new country, you tell people you're going to be there, you pick a court, you know, I guess you try to pick a court that has some kind of flair, like, oh, this is the court Luka Doncic grew up playing on, or this is the court that Giannis grew up playing on. You go play there. But I think what was less clear was what it was outside of that. Like, how did it live outside of that? Last time you were on, you offered us millions of dollars to come on the road with you. We refused because we're just too committed to this show. But in all seriousness, like, do you have a better idea of what it is now that you're done?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, it's just so much.
Now
more
that you're done, do you know what it was?
Well, it's not. I mean, it's not done. I mean, that's the thing. It's not done. It's now like for example, I really try to emphasize to the hosts or the, you know, the people who are sort of helping me coordinate in a city is they listen. I really want to make sure we host a clinic with some kids, you know, boys and girls. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really important to me, and I've had some success with that. Not always. You know, it's sometimes just can't happen, and sometimes it doesn't. But it has happened in various places, you know, in Manila and Iceland, Mexico City, in Zambia as well, Kenya, places like that. So it has happened. But then also, you know, what I've learned without even knowing and without possibly, you know, even predicting this to happen was like in Zagreb, for example, I played on a court there that's a historically really significant court in Zagreb. And about 12 years or so ago, it was renovated by Derrick Rose and Adidas. You know, they brought it up to a really high level, but it basically just didn't get any maintenance after that. And so I just referenced in my video, I said, this court historically is important. It used to be really good, but it obviously, you know, it started to decay and no one's looked after it. And once I put that video up, people from Zagreb, actually the local government decided based on my video to reinvest in the court. And they're in the process of renovating that, which hopefully will be complete at some point in the next 3 or 4 months. So to have an impact like that is incredible, you know, to know that, you know, my sort of love for playing basketball and traveling could lead to some people in, or, you know, some cities actually investing in the court so that I'm not just going there to play and then leave. I'm actually leaving behind some sort of an impact, and, you know, legacy's a little strong. We won't go quite
okay.
there.
Okay, well, let's relax here.
Yeah, but,
hey, you know, you should go play basketball on other crumbling infrastructure. You know, like, maybe go play basketball on that bridge in Baltimore. Right. Maybe they could repair it quicker.
I mean, but that's actually funny you say that, because now people do sort of email me or message me and say, hey, you know, do you want to come here and play? We could use the attention here so that maybe we can get the government also to invest there.
What about the sort of the content part? So if I understand what you're saying, you're basically saying that, or are you saying that you've moved from less of a, I thought I was going to be going and sort of being this travel host tour guide and filming all this stuff and then packaging it into whether it's YouTube, or I know you were talking about pitching it as a TV show. And are you saying that you're now sort of less focused on that and more focused on just going to the countries and doing clinics and education and stuff like that there, and that's the thing, rather than making it into a show?
Well, I wouldn't say I've moved away from it. I would just say that challenge of putting it into a you know, a documentary type series is just very, very challenging for me for many ways. One, because most of the stuff is shot, you know, for, you know, Reels and YouTube and things like that, and TikTok. So then, you know, the format always has to sort of be manipulate around. That's one part of it. The storytelling, the writing, the editing, the scripting, all that sort of stuff, you know, like putting it together, releasing it consistently, like that workload is a ton of calories to do by myself. So that I would still love to have, you know, a production crew with me everywhere I go, because I really believe if someone is focused on that, like the one I did from Paris, where I had a couple of guys mm-hmm. who came and put it together, that's what I feel I can make, you know, in every city and every stop that I go, almost every game, I feel there's that there, because I'm speaking to local people, I'm hearing their stories, we're eating, we're drinking, we're having a great time. It only needs to be 10 or 15 minutes, but going from doing the minute long, you know, YouTube shorts and reels and things like that to a 10 minute feature is like just exhausting to try to put it all together. So I wouldn't say I'm not trying to do that. I still am, but I'm also trying to, you know, financially make it more sustainable and also focus on, okay, the content I can do is the short form stuff. And hopefully that will continue to attract someone who can come along and say, hey, we can help you blow this out. But of course, financially is the biggest challenge there, because no one, and nor should they, would come and travel and do it all for free. And I don't have the means to bring high quality production crew with me everywhere I go. I mean, that would just, you know.
Yeah, if you're a low quality producer, though,
yeah,
sure.
Well, that's right. And I mean, it is low quality because, you know, it's like, hey, hold my phone, shoot this stuff, will you? You know, and then you try to make it happen.
So, literally, in some spots, you're just, hey, man, could you hold this phone and I'm going to try to hit this three-pointer?
Well, I don't know if I told this story on the last show, but in Istanbul, it was an early morning run on a Friday morning or something like that. And we had a group, there was five guys who came along, and I said to the main guy who was helping organize, I said, do you have anyone who can just shoot? He said, oh, my wife, you know, she can come along. And she was on a Zoom call at the time, so she was at work. So she's like this in one hand. And then she's like this with my phone, like this, you know, trying to shoot it. So some of the footage is sort of shot from below, and some's up here and some's over here. But, you know, hey, look, it's better than nothing. You know, you try to find a story and you try to find a theme. And again, if you can make that happen, you can usually get something out of it. But again, anything is better than nothing. And and I'll take that for the time being.
Well, what about when you've decided like how to approach the content? Because obviously, I'm seeing the stuff that you're posting on Instagram. I've been a little surprised, I have to say, about how much of the footage you post is taking these pickup games seriously. Like you're analyzing them. Like you're coming on, you're like, oh, this big Tommy came. He had a big he had an inside out game. You know, he was running some post moves. Then Smelly Tim was there. He was shooting from the outside. You know, and then Tina was there. Tina's just spinorama in the lane. And you know, it's like, why did you decide to focus on like doing kind of like X's and O's of these pickup games?
Well, so I don't think people want to just watch me play basketball. I don't think that's all that appealing. So what I always try to do, and I sort of think,
if you need confirmation from that, you can ask me directly.
Well, but that's right. So that's exactly right. I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot of appeal in me just putting up highlights of myself everywhere I go. Now, I like to include one or two clips of myself, of course. You know, I mean,
of course.
You know,
it'd be weird if you're only human.
But I, you know, like when I think about things like, for example, Seinfeld, for any sitcom, any show, I mean, you know, each show has a sort of story and a chapter to it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I try to find that theme, that thread each time I go.
Right. I mean, I was thinking about this yesterday. Are you worried ever that basketball is too universal? So here's
wow.
what I'm serious. Here's what I mean by that. So it's like, let's say, like, you, I know you've made the comparison in the past to a Bourdain, let's say. Now, he would go to these countries and he would do different things, like, I don't know, go horseback riding or, you know, do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You know, depending where he was, he would do things of that culture. But the heart of the show was always food. Mm-hmm. And people love seeing food in different places and how it's prepared and different ingredients and the terroir and what kitchens look like all across the world and what people's living rooms look like all across the world. And one time he's eating like three-star food from like a famous French chef, and then another time he's sitting on a plastic stool in Vietnam, and you know, it's the high, the low, and obviously there's so many different cuisines from around the world. Basketball is sort of basketball. It's the same rules everywhere. The courts, you know, maybe one's painted blue and one's painted yellow, but they kind of look the same. The rules are the same, you know.
Well, I'll just
people
I'll just,
shoot
I'll,
the same. Yeah. So that's my question. Like,
yeah.
You've been to 20 countries.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's different enough in each country, and will it be different when you go to the next 10?
Yes, because the rules aren't the same, you know, and the, like, obviously the ball going in the basket goes in, that doesn't change, but whether or not it's like make it take it, whether or not it's like if you score, you've got to take the ball from the end line to throw it in. Sometimes it's a live ball, no matter what happens, rather than having to check the ball out sometimes. Sometimes, you know, it's like, for example, in Brazil, we played up to six, and then if it's tied at six, you play to 10. So those are the things that I do need to do a better job of explaining the differences so that mm-hmm. someone like yourself actually does go, oh, okay, that is different. And those are the sorts of things that, again, sometimes I don't really grasp that in the moment because you're playing and you know, you're just trying to shoot or whatever. And then I come back and I look at the footage and I'm like, man, there's... I could tell that story there, but I didn't quite capture enough of that particular happening. Like actually in Zagreb, the way that we played there, I didn't capture enough of the fact that you had to inbound the ball from the end line. And that was one of the things I wanted to talk about. I mean, the video that I had, I think the most successful one was the one in Belgrade. And I don't know if that was because of the court itself, you know, just the game that was played, or the fact that I sort of said, hey, in Belgrade, in Serbia, this is how they play, and the ball just keeps on moving around. Now, maybe it was that, maybe it was the setting, I'm not sure, but I know that that's one of those things that I really want to try to bring to life a little bit more so that people know that if you go to a country, you know, it might not be the same rules that you've played in other parts of the world.
Okay, so what about off the court? Last time you were here, you told us a story about you took a basketball to a restaurant. I don't know. I can't think of a culture in which that would be encouraged. But you brought a basketball to a restaurant. We're dribbling it around with Sasha Doncic, Luka's father. You got drunk. A man tried to fight you. You know, you were very hungover the next day. You had to delete some footage. I don't know what was on that tape.
Yeah.
I
think it got transferred to the hard drive, but deleted off the phone.
Okay. Any good party stories since then?
Yeah, well, let me think. Where have I been since then? So after that,
I just want to know what's the drunkest, sloppiest, most disgusting, regretful thing you've done.
I haven't really had a balls to the wall belter of a night. I mean, as far as drinking until 3 a.m. I will say Copacabana Beach is just all vibes. I mean, it's one of the greatest destinations you can possibly go to. I think Rio might be my favorite city in the whole world. It's beautiful. The beach is amazing. The food is incredible. People are just literally walking along the road there with caipirinhas, and they're just basically like stopping people. Here, have one of these. And you sit there and you drink it. The Brazilian culture, I think, really just sort of suits me. It's beautiful and it's relaxing. And hopefully I'll be going back there too next year.
It's translation. You were looking at a lot of butts. Just is that what you're saying?
What's that?
I said translation, you were looking at a lot of butts.
Well, it's hard not to. I mean, they're all out there. You know, they're all out there. And that's the thing, you know, the men all wear those really small swimmers themselves, right? Now, again, the first day...
Yeah, I was talking about men's butts.
The first day you arrive, you're sort of, you're like, oh, no.
Well, he looked like he could box out with that thing.
Well, you know, I'm like, I'm wearing my big sort of board shorts and my sun protection shirt. And I'm like, what am I doing, man? I'm going to get in these dacks, man. These dacks are great. And... I could just see JD strolling along there too in the mornings.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Oh, Lee, you know, this is great. You know, let's move on because the first is this good question is about sunscreen. Before we get to it, though, some very quick housekeeping. If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/isthisgood. You'll get ad-free episodes. You'll get access to our thriving community on Discord. You'll get an exclusive episode every month, and that episode dropped on Thursday. So go join. You can get a free trial. We discussed our earliest dancing memories. I had... maybe my hottest take ever about barbecue. People are going to be upset about my takes on barbecue. We talked about something called the Dull Woman's Club that Rachel is thinking of joining.
Yes.
Lee, what's your earliest dance memory? Like going to like a school dance or something, like fifth grade, sixth grade.
Hang on. What's your earliest dance memory? I think I know your earliest dance memory.
That's not my earliest. You're talking about when I got an erection during the song What's Up by Four Non Blondes. That's not my earliest memory. I told the story. You'll have to go on the podcast.
Every time I hear that song, I just think of you and your boner. It's great.
All right, Lee, let's go here. First topic. I'm not going to tell you what the topic is first. I'm going to read you an email first. Okay. Hi, Matt and JD. My wife and I were on vacation taking a day trip to some islands in Thailand. As we approached the first stop, everyone was getting their bags sorted and putting on sunscreen. I couldn't help but notice the couple across from us because the woman was applying sunscreen to her partner on parts of his body he could have very much reached on his own. Chest, arms, face, you name it. It looked like the guy really didn't want to be there. I've always lived by the rule that the only area I would ever ask anyone to sunscreen for me is my back, but am I alone here? So, Lee, here's the question. Applying sunscreen to your partner anywhere besides their back, is this good?
I wouldn't do it to Roxanna rather than her back, but of course with boys, you've got to, you know, with kids, you have to put it all over them because they won't. You shouldn't need to rub somebody else's, like your wife shouldn't need to rub your own chest. I mean, you should be able to do that.
Why not? It's fun.
Well, yeah, it's fun, but
it's erotic.
Yeah, and I'm just
some as long lotions. As
it is erotic in some ways, I suppose. But I would take care of that part of it myself, and I lather up everywhere because because
you got skimpy little dacks now.
Wow, that's right. Yeah,
so you got to really lather up.
You have to. Yeah.
Yeah, are you a spray guy or a lotion guy?
No, I go heavy, 70 plus, man. I hate being sunburned. I just hate it. I hate it so much. So I overdo it. I'm the, like, you know, you see little blobs of white in your ear and stuff like that. You know? Yeah, one of those.
That's
dudes.
What we call a cool guy.
Yeah.
What about, like, back in Australia, obviously, famous beaches. Were you ever one of those people that put oil on yourself to tan more?
No. No, I didn't like the smell of it. I didn't like the sort of texture of it either. You know, it was always way more oily and you know, moist than just cream. So,
totally.
You know, no, we were always a sunscreen family.
Okay, well then a thought experiment. So you're in Copacabana and you're alone, right?
Yes.
Would you ask a stranger to put sunscreen on your back?
No, I wouldn't do that. Because I would wear my sun shirt. Even though I'm sun creamed underneath, I still wear my sun shirt these days.
But you're the only one on that Copacabana beach wearing a sun shirt.
I know.
The only
person.
What about getting into other people's cultures?
Yeah,
fitting in?
I think it's a little uncomfortable by yourself to go up and say, hey, can you just rub cream on my back? You know, I think it just feels a little, you know.
Would you do
suggestive.
It, Matt?
Would I ask someone or would I do Lee's back? Yeah. Because I'd rather ask a stranger. I would ask a stranger to do Lee's back. But yeah. I wouldn't tell him, so he'd have his back turned to me and then it'd just be someone else's hand on there. I mean, let's be honest. The spray has saved men from that moment that we don't like for really no good reason of asking a friend to put suntan lotion on our back, even though... I think technically you do need to rub in the spray for it to work.
No.
I don't know if that's...
You don't?
You don't?
No, but
you
I...
sure?
But yeah, but see,
sure.
I don't trust the spray though for that because you spray it and then you just leave it. Like, I would just massage it in so it gets everywhere.
Into me?
Sure, why not? Why not? Okay. If we're on Copacabana, man, and anything goes anyway, so we wouldn't look out of place.
Now, would you ask a woman, because perhaps, you know, in terms of who you're attracted to, that might be more comfortable for you.
Right.
Or would you ask a man because you wouldn't want to put a woman out to touch your disgusting back?
I think either way, it's a little, to a stranger, I think it's just a little odd either way to just go up to a woman and say, hey, would you mind? Like, for example, in Sao Paulo, I borrowed sunscreen off somebody, but I didn't ask them to... you know, rub it in. I said, hey.
I don't know. When you bum a smoke from someone, it's cordial if they light it for you.
Way different. That's not, they're not putting it in your mouth and then, you know, retrieving it from you and, you know, you just have to, like, suck it in.
Yeah.
That's about probably the best way to ask somebody. It's like, hey, could you put some of that on me? You know, and just turn around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you say, yeah, could I borrow that?
Yeah.
And they go, yeah, sure. And then you just turn
just put
you
it
take,
on.
You
so
turn
you,
off,
just go ahead.
And bend over.
But see, if they said that to me, I would say, you can have as much as you want, but I'm not rubbing it in on you too.
Wow.
Oh, so you wouldn't do it for someone else?
No, not a stranger. Not a stranger.
Why? What's
if they asked you?
No, you hate being sunburned. Why would you want to see another man be sunburned?
I wouldn't want to see them. I'm just saying I wouldn't feel comfortable putting my hands on a naked man's back just completely out of the blue like that.
I would do it to you,
JD.
You're like the fucking Coppertone dog. You're on that beach. You're,
hey, man.
You want to bite people's undies and tear them down a little bit.
It's like not throwing a life preserver to somebody.
Nah,
you're
a
70-plus SPF guy, and you won't rub it into some poor soul's back.
Hey, I would, like I say, it's like you. I would give you as much cream as you want. Do whatever you want with it. It's not up to me to then distribute it about you. Okay, so you know, put on a shirt.
Wow.
Yeah, you can have the shirt off my back and then rub
the
sunscreen
on. What if they begged you? What if they were like, please,
definitely
sir,
not.
Please.
I'd say, no, you're begging, get out of here. In fact, give me that 70 back. I'm going somewhere else. I'm going to Ipanema.
Yeah, that's right. It's like leadership. Or like you said, JD, with volunteering for chaperoning your children's school trip.
Yeah.
The people that volunteer to do it should be the people that don't get to do it.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Yes.
So it's the people that are begging. That's the suspicious people.
That's exactly right.
But if you just go and just respectfully say, I would like you to put suntan lotion.
Please rub cream on my back. Oh, sure. That doesn't sound weird at all, man.
Why do you think that sounds weird? What are you thinking?
do it on the street. You're in Los Angeles. Go down to, what's the closest beach to where you are?
Venice Beach, where I work out, obviously, every day.
Go do it today. I'm sure it's a beautiful day today. Go up to a strange man and just go, hey, would you mind, you know? See what he says.
Okay, I'll try it out. And I will report back next week.
Yeah, no, get someone to video it and do it that sort of like discreetly so they're in the background. Mm. Have Jilly like shoot it, right?
Yeah.
And you just walk up and just go up to someone and say, hey, can you just rub some of this on my back?
I mean, I totally could see that as one of those fucking stupid videos that I see when you're scrolling on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I think it would be exactly, the best way would be exactly like we're saying it. Can I borrow that sunblock?
Yeah.
And then you just take off your shirt and wait. And see the person's hilarious reaction. Hey, Leon, the Patreon episode only last week. By the way, you listened to that, right?
Of course.
Not only do you listen to every episode of this, you're also on the Patreon?
I am, absolutely.
Wow. $5 category, $10, or what are you doing?
There can be no price limit when it comes to subscribing.
So you're in the $25 category?
$25? What, a month or a week?
You get thanked every month.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I'm not thanking you.
Well, how much to rub sunscreen on my back then?
for an old colleague, free, I would say.
All right,
Lee, let's move on to another question about travel here. When people need help navigating life's biggest decisions, they seek our wise counsel and we deliver an airtight verdict. It's time to settle this. So this person wrote in to ask, hello. I started hanging out with a girl I met on Tinder about 3 months ago. Mostly a chill kind of relationship. We'd hang out only on weekends since we're both busy with work. We'd go to restaurants and museums and explore KC. I guess they live in Kansas City. No titles have been set. 2 weeks ago, I mentioned I would like to visit Chicago sometime. As a half-hearted thing, we started looking on Expedia for flights and hotels to see what prices were like, but did not book anything. The next day, she called my bluff and Venmo'd me $650 for half the trip. Since then, I've been having anxiety because I have never taken a trip with someone I don't know that well. 5 days is a very long trip if things sour fast. Also, now I'm roped into paying money for this. Please settle this. Is it too early to be taking a couple's trip? That's from Benton. So, Lee, with 3 months, would that stress you out, going on vacation with a paramour?
I think that's the best thing you can do because when you travel with a partner, you learn very quickly whether or not that partner is going to be someone you can have a long-term relationship with or not. Traveling is a make or breaker for a relationship. So I would highly recommend getting into a travel trip with someone earlier into the relationship than later. Because if you're 2 or 3 years down the track and you haven't taken one, and then you go, it doesn't matter, 2 days, 5 days, 10 days, whatever, you'll find out within that first 72 hours whether or not you're compatible. And if you're not compatible, that relationship is dead. If you are compatible, you may have found certainly a long-term, potentially a life partner. So do it.
So you're saying this, you would use this as a litmus test to figure out if you were in a good... So was there ever one that didn't go well for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why
a woman would do on a trip that would drive you nuts.
Again, it's not necessarily that one thing. It's just you're spending that much time in somewhat stressful environments. You know, the plane's late. You're going through security. You're going to make it on time. What did they pack? Where do they want to stay? You know, what are they, a morning person? Are they a night person? They want to drink? Whatever. You learn all these things because you're in each other's space, you know, 24 hours, which is, you know, different to when you're just going out for dinner or, you know, you're sort of getting to know each other and you meet up. So when you're traveling, those extra stresses that come with traveling really test out how people react and their moods and their, you know, their way of handling setbacks and obstacles. And if you find a person who's just like, you just want to, you know, strangle each other. Great. Mm-hmm. You found that out early and you don't need to worry about whether or not, you know, the relationship's going to last, because it probably won't. And for me, for someone like me who loves to travel, you know, if Roxana didn't like to travel, then, you know, we would have found that out very early in our relationship too. Fortunately, we do. We know each other's style.
Or if she didn't like to travel, you could just go to 20 cities in 20 countries without her.
Yeah, well, that's right. But, you know, so I think traveling, for me, again, I'm only going to speak for myself. I think it's one of the most valuable and important things you can do in life. You learn so much about yourself. You learn so much about life. You learn so much about just so many things that you can't learn until you're actually in those, you know, in a different bed, in a different city. You maybe don't speak the language. Maybe you've, you know, lost your credit card or something like that. And so it really puts you under stress, because if ever you're feeling down or bad or sick, the last place you want to be is somewhere far from home. You want to be in your own bed, in your own house, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that brings then a mood change, you know. So if you're like, oh my God, I just, you know, I've had upset stomachs everywhere, you know, and when I'm lying in my bed just with Imodium just going, oh my God, I wish I could just wake up and be in my own bed, you know, it's a stress that gets placed on you. And
okay, so, hey, let's take a pause from this question. Worst diarrhea, what country gave you the worst diarrhea?
Well, it's still Syria back in 2005. That hasn't been topped. I don't think it will get topped.
Nothing topped in the 20 countries in this.
No. It hasn't been too bad. I was a little upset in Brazil and Kenya. I got a little bit, but I'm loaded with Imodium these days, so I can usually get through it.
A prophylactic Imodium.
Yeah. You just pack. I just, you know, the first sign of it, I'm like, boom, I'm in. So, you know, that's one thing that life has taught me, or traveling has taught me anyway. Pack Imodium. Okay. Imodium first, passport second.
Yeah. Okay. These people, I mean, what did they say? They're dating for like 3 months, but barely, right? They're seeing each other like once a week, basically.
Mm-hmm. But they're exploring Kansas City together. So they have sort of...
And each other, perhaps.
Well, one would hope at one this would point, think. I
mean, yes.
Well, you never know.
Right.
People...
Well, true. Yeah.
But, you know, I guess really the question is, do you fart in front of each other? Because that's going to
come
up. You know,
if that's what I was going to say, because we're looking at it from the perspective of him saying like, well, I don't know. Or Lee, you're talking about like, well, you know, we're trying to figure out if she is good for me on this trip. But... I'm more concerned about myself, really, like JD's saying, like, you know, if I'm used to just going out for dinner and then we go home and then, you know, she leaves in the morning. Now that's not an option for me to go ham, so to speak, once she's out the door. So I'm more worried about myself and my own habits that she might be disgusted by. But I guess you don't have anything that you think would repulse a woman.
Me or JD? Yeah.
No, JD's a fine human specimen. Yeah, I'm just referring to you.
Those are the sorts of things, right? When you share a hotel room with someone, you need to use the restroom, and it's like, you know, you don't want to, if someone has to use it straight away after you, those are the sorts of things if you're not used to, and when you're only dating and casual, you don't tend to have to experience those things together, but you might have to do it 2 or 3 days in a row. Excuse me. And, you know, so that's why it tests sort of feelings and emotions towards people. And it can be difficult.
Especially for you, because if you have to fart, your doctor has ordered you to do it at all
scientific
times. Scientific wait.
Evidence and has suggested that. But of course, that comes after you've been intimate with your partner as well. I mean, I don't think you would be flatulating before you've been intimate with a partner, because that, you know... That would be a bit of a
tough time to do it is right after your.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say right after, but it gives you a little more
respectful amount of time.
Yeah, at least wait till after.
At least wait, yeah. At least give it 5 minutes, and then it's
yeah. Well, we have an update on this one, Lee, and you're correct. Update on the trip.
We had the best time ever.
Yeah, in Chicago. Great food, people, attractions, views, entertainment. Had it all. No issues with the lady friend. We had a great time. Everything was superb. Wow. Going on a new trip in a new relationship is definitely good.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
So there we go.
That's the way to do it. So now they are going to approach the next trip with that just like, all right, let's go somewhere else now. And let's have a great time, because they're going to be excited to be sharing that time with each other. So... That's it. You find out one way or the other.
Or you get addicted to exploring new cities with new people. It's like, oh, it's you again. Okay, I guess. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. This is kind of lame.
But I you know, like that. That's the only thing about my traveling is that I would love to have my family and my wife with me, because there are sometimes, like I say, when you're on Copacabana Beach and like, oh my God, I'd love the boys to just be playing in the ocean right now.
Mm-hmm. Roxana, see all these asses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Roxana,
put sunscreen
just,
on my back and my front.
She could be there, just, you know, meditating, walking around, enjoying herself. I mean, that's the part of it that is that's what you're saying.
I wish my wife was here so she could be sitting silently and not talking.
Well, she would love to wake up 5 a.m. on the beach and just sit there and just soak it all in. I know that.
For sure.
You know, those are the sorts of things, that meditative experience, that I think really, really fills you up too, because you're like, I just, you know, put the phone down, just go out there, breathe it all in. And you know, it is something, especially now because we're so connected to everything. A couple of times I do just leave my phone. I'm like, I'm just going to breathe it in. And that sometimes you're like, man, I need the content. But you know what? I'm just going
to
breathe it in.
I'm here to make content. Exactly. But
it's hard.
The influencer's dilemma.
It is.
I want to enjoy
but when
myself
you,
and be
when
present.
You actually do sort of, you know, discipline yourself like that, you come away going, yeah, I mean, not everything is just, I just can't capture everything, and you don't need to capture everything like that.
All right, Lee, let's move on to our next segment, Unpopular Opinions. Mm. So this is where I look on the internet for unpopular opinions, and we talk about them and see if they're good, if these people are right or not. This one I picked specially for you. Here's the opinion. The tennis audience code of conduct is ridiculous. So this person continues, I was recently watching tennis on TV, and I was struck by how uptight that sport is. You have to stay absolutely silent during a rally. In fact, you need to allow a few seconds of silence prior to the serve. Even the TV announcers, who are usually not in the venue itself, stay silent. Why? It sounds like everyone's asleep. You cannot show any emotion for most of the match. I follow a bunch of other sports like soccer, baseball, volleyball, and in those sports, audiences can be emotional as they want. They can freely cheer for their team or against the opponent. I was once told that it's because tennis requires a lot of focus from the athletes. You mean to say that all other sports don't require athletes to focus on what they're doing? I guess I just don't understand the ambiance of tennis. It looks like a super uptight event to participate in. I kind of agree. I mean, I don't really understand why we're so, like, obsequious and respectful of tennis players, other than that's just the tradition of it. But, you know, there's always a lot of shushing, and if anyone gets out of hand at the, you know, Roland Garros, they say, oh, quiet down, please. So what do you think? You think, well, tennis should be a little more boisterous?
Yeah, I mean, I would just push back and say that I think it is, actually. I'm not sure if this person is talking about being in there in person, but I've been to, you know, not Roland Garros, but Wimbledon, Australian Open, US Open. And after the serve does need to be quiet, because that's the biggest moment of concentration for the person serving, and it would be
okay. But why though? Why? What because about free throw and basketball?
No, it's well, you can make noise though. You can make noise in basketball.
I mean, yeah, but why not then? Why can't you make noise in tennis?
That specific moment when you're serving requires so much concentration for where you're trying to put it, where you're trying to land it.
But sorry, yeah. The more concentration than a free throw?
Yes, it does for that, because it's so much more important, that one particular motion, than a free throw. A free throw throughout in the game is you know, can mean.
What if it's Rolando Blackman?
Well, yeah. Exactly. People were putting Isaiah was trying to jump on him. Remember?
Yeah, but exactly that's my point. Yeah. We're to the point now where it's like you hand out those thunder sticks and noisemakers, and people jump up and down, and mascots do a wiggly hot dog dance under the rim to try to distract people. Yeah. And a layman watching the sport goes like, wow, that must be really hard to hit a free throw with all this pressure. Everyone's staring at you. Everyone's making noise. And you, as a basketball savant, would say, actually, they practice this so much, and they're so in the zone, and they're so locked in, and they're such a professional practice athlete. They don't even notice. They tune out all this noise. So why can't fucking Djokovic tune out all this noise?
I think it's apples and oranges there, because when you're on the road, the crowd is, you know, I mean, they're hitting those, you know, the plastic things. You know, Larry Bird back in the day, they'd put up supermodels, swimsuit models there to try to distract him. But in tennis, it's the same with golf when you're teeing off. It's the same thing. You need to just quiet for that one moment while, because it's so impactful for the remaining point in tennis or the stroke in golf. And you see guys like, you know, when Tiger Woods, people deliberately break his concentration when he's got his backswing going, because they know how much it can impact it. So it's only that point. The rest of the point, I think, is fine, because it's hard to not let the emotions sometimes come out. when I was watching Leighton Hewitt and Andre Agassi in 2002, man, I was like vociferous in the fans, screaming and yelling throughout the points because it was an emotional moment there. But during the serve, I was staying quiet. I mean, it's just that's just the way it is. So
people aren't really screaming during the point. They're going like someone hits a forehand and they don't think that Agassi's going to get to it, and then he does, and he hits it cross court, and people go, "Ooh!" Yeah. They're not like. They're not clapping. They're, you know, until the point is over. I mean, it's more like gasps and reactions.
Yeah, but that.
But it's like tennis and golf. We've just decided. No, like sorry, but is there anything harder than hitting a 102 mile an hour baseball?
Yeah, but that
there's again, not again, because again, you know it's the famous thing. If you hit Ted Williams hit 400, that was the best ever. That's failing 6 out of 10 times. Yeah, you don't go 6 out of 10 on your first serve.
You're right.
So hitting a baseball's harder, and baseball.
Yeah, but I just don't think that's a fair comparison for what the serve means in tennis and what the drive means in golf compared to baseball, because you get multiple opportunities in baseball. You get
multiple opportunities to serve.
Two chances, but that second one obviously is significantly different to the first one. So, you know, I'm okay on the serve and the stroke, you know, the drive and tee being quiet, but the rest of it, let it out, man. It's fine, you know.
It sounds like you don't think as much of tennis and golf players as you do of, you know, basketball players. You think they're too fragile.
Again, like that.
To handle some noise.
I remember the Raptors in the playoffs against Dwight Howard when he was at the free throw line. The noise there was deafening. He couldn't hear. You know, there's no way he could concentrate. But it's just, again, one free throw in the course of a game or a couple of free throws versus, you know, especially an individual sport like tennis and golf, it can have tremendous impact. And especially when they're not used to it. And so when people do purposely like scream out when Tiger Woods has got his backswing going, they're doing it knowing that it's going to throw him off. And, you know.
Right.
You know.
Well, one thing I'll say is, sorry, JD, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say there's no home team really in tennis, which could be a difference.
Well, because it depends. Let's say, yeah. I mean
certainly like if Andy Murray is playing in Wimbledon.
Yes.
He has the crowd behind him, erotic at the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
But in let's say basketball, you do cheer loudly when the opponent is shooting a free throw. But when your team is shooting a free throw, the crowd is pretty silent.
Well, that's
but I think that would be weird in tennis if it was like you're silent when Andy Murray is serving at Wimbledon, but then you're like jeering Djokovic when he's serving.
Yeah, but that does happen in Davis Cup tennis because that's countries versus countries and it's always in one country. So Davis Cup is a lot more of that atmosphere where they are, you know, deathly quiet when their own guy is serving or girl. But on the other end, it's harder for the other guy because the people are trying to make noise and try to put them off. So, you know, Davis Cup used to be awesome for that because it was real rivalries of tennis with home court advantage. But it's not really the same anymore.
Mm. No. JD, what's it like in the world of pickleball?
They're quiet for the serve, for sure.
Oh, really?
100%. And I, you know, this is not going to shock you, but I like it. I like the when everything hushes, when the announcers start whispering into the mic. I like that, and then it's dead silent for the serve. And here's why I like it: because everybody's focused on the game. Everybody in that stadium is locked in. Whereas at a baseball game, I think baseball does deserve the respect of if somebody's getting a 100-mile fastball pitched at you and you're trying to hit it, they should be afforded the same courtesy of silence, basically.
Yeah, but sports are supposed to be fun.
It is fun. It's fun to be sitting on cheering the... You're sitting on the edge of your seat. You're locked in instead of fucking chatting to your neighbor and having beer and shit. Like,
I don't think Matt was sitting in there. I think he was sitting in the comfort of the all-you-can-eat buffet. Well, you lathered up with sunscreen when we were at the Braves game that time.
No. I was
who put the sunscreen
the
on your back that day?
An elaborate system. I used the back of a broom.
Yeah. If we go to a baseball game together, whip your shirt off, and I'll be happy to massage some sunscreen into your back in the stands there, okay?
Okay. Oh, well, now, how could I refuse that offer? Anyways, I don't know the answer. I just think it's weird what we choose to respect and what we don't respect. And maybe it's that those are more European sports and Europeans are supposed to be more sophisticated than us. Well, what about what cricket? Because that's the basically European baseball. Do they cheer during that?
Yeah. I mean, nonstop, you know, because it's a continual sort of, you know, motion. Yeah.
But in soccer, you know, famously the loudest, most aggressive fans, they're shooting flares onto the field. But I think during penalty kicks at the end of a game to decide the game, people are quiet.
Well, I think it depends on which end you're at and which game it is, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're, you know, if it's Champions League and you're, you know, in Manchester, there's no way they're going to be quiet if it's Real Madrid shooting penalties, but they would be for the Man United players.
And that's what makes soccer fun, people do say. The chants, the cheering.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. For sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Well, confusing.
Mm. Sports, man.
I'm going to agree with this unpopular opinion, but...
Okay.
Lee, you don't have to. there's only one thing left to do, and that's play subjective trivia. So subjective trivia, it's just like regular trivia, except only I know the answer. And today's question's inspired by you, Lee, because I've noticed over the years as I've observed you silently, as if you're about to serve in tennis, you have a lot of... dieting idiosyncrasies. Mm. Okay, so like for instance, you got some fascinating flavor combinations I've seen you eat at the office over the years. My favorite is of course pesto with pickled ginger. Mm-hmm. You have dieting superstitions, like the night before you have to make a big decision, you should eat a steak.
Yeah.
You have like sort of flip-flopping diets, like sometimes you're an omnivore, sometimes you're a pescatarian, sometimes you're a vegetarian, sometimes you're a vegan. So my question today is, which of these fad diets do I think you'd most want to do? Okay, so I'm going to give you four choices. You have to pick one of these to do for, let's say, I don't know, 2-3 weeks.
Okay.
You packed on a couple extra pounds on Copacabana, mm-hmm. and you got to lose it. So which of these fad diets do I think you'd be most interested in? So number one, the Liver King diet. Do you know anything about this?
No.
Okay. This guy, Brian Johnson, he's a social media influencer.
Who made
ACDC.
Who?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't work ACDC into the intro. Yeah. Tried. So this diet is called Ancestral Lifestyle. So he eats a large amount of raw, unprocessed organs and raw meat, focusing on a very high daily intake of liver. Okay? Now, this guy is jacked, but... Yeah. He has denied using steroids, but then emails were leaked, and turns out, he uses a lot of steroids. Okay, so that's the Liver King diet. Okay. Number two, your option, the Master Cleanse. So this is a liquid-only diet. You'll be drinking a concoction of water, lemon juice, maple syrup, and cayenne pepper. And reportedly Beyonce used it to lose 20 pounds in 2 weeks for her role in Dreamgirls.
Hmm.
Okay. Intermittent fasting. So this is an eating pattern that cycles between periods of fasting and eating. It doesn't specify really which foods you should be eating, but rather when you should be eating them. So for this purposes, and the most common version of this I'd seen is basically like a 16-hour fast. So this is you're eating one meal a day, usually just dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I know this one, maybe because you could, in theory, eat what you want, but you're a man that loves snacking. You love breakfast. You love your bananas. So I feel like that's what would make that one tough for you. And then finally, the cabbage soup diet. This diet involves eating homemade cabbage soup for every meal. You are allowed some additional foods in moderation, such as fruits, vegetables, or skim milk. But, the good news is you can have unlimited cabbage soup.
This is a real pick your poison, eh, Lee?
Yeah, I mean... You want me to answer now, or is there another one? Or
please,
I think I would go.
Lee.
Yes,
this is what Matt thinks.
Oh,
you would pick.
Okay, then. Okay.
So you got to start.
I don't know. Start with what you think. Which is most attractive?
I don't think the liver one. I don't think you would choose that one. That sounds gross. It's just way too much meat and organs anyway. Any form of organ is gross. So I think that one's out. I think you probably think I'm leaning towards, because you mentioned the intermittent fasting, you don't think that's for me. So you sort of played your hand a little bit on that one there.
Yeah. Well, do you think it's for you? Would you ever consider fasting? Yes,
but I would do it in a different way. I would load up in the morning and not eat at night. Right. So I would have a big breakfast, a big lunch, and then...
No. You can't be eating two meals.
Yes, you can. But what difference does it make?
Yeah, what difference does it make when those hours are of not eating?
It makes a difference because I'm asking the question. And unlike on past shows we did together, I'm saying you have to follow the rules.
Okay,
what's this intermittent fasting is you're having dinner. So you're waking up, you're going hungry. You're not eating your bananas. You're not eating your eggs.
Yeah, well, see, the reason I point that one out, though, is because I do tend to... I'm kind of in that at the moment, really. I eat way more.
Interesting.
Well, I do eat a dinner at night, but not nowhere near as, you know, sort of big as it used to be. I fill up on breakfast and lunch.
You're not doing fasting.
No, but I'm not doing it in the same way you said. But what I'm saying is right now, I used to have, you know, dinner, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner. And now it's like breakfast, lunch, and then it's like, you know,
light dinner.
Yeah, a light dinner. You know, almost.
I know.
Never
I
meet.
Hate to be a stickler, but in what way is that like intermittent fasting? That's well, eating I'm, three I'm saying, fucking
I'm,
meals.
No, I'm saying that's closer to where I am right now.
Okay, that's all you say. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not saying it is it. I'm just saying, you know. It's in a different order here.
So Matt, but you're in your scenario, the intermittent fasting is he's only eating dinner.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So not, that's okay. Yeah. Well, so no, then I don't think you would choose that. I think you were going to choose the Beyonce one then.
You think you're, but again, this is what I think you would choose of these four. You're going to not eat anything. You're just going to eat water and cayenne pepper.
No, I wouldn't do that. I'm just thinking what you would think I would do. I would have that in the morning, sure. But I would need something more substantial after that.
Right.
So I guess, you know, based on the, process of elimination, it would be the cabbage patch cabbage diet.
So you're making just a big batch of cabbage soup and you're eating that all day.
Well, if it's Russian, yes, I will eat it. It's good. But you know, if it's anything else, no.
Like a borscht, you mean?
Yes.
But I think doesn't it have cream in it? I can't imagine that this diet would allow you to be eating a creamy cabbage.
You can have some creamy ones. I had one of those in Lithuania, but you can get them more watery than just the creamy ones. Mm-hmm. The creamy ones are way too heavy. Like, yeah, you get a bowl of that, you're three or four scoops in, and you're like, I'm done.
I'll have the cabbage soup, please. Very watery.
But in Russia, I did have the cabbage soup, and it was amazing. It was really, really good. So,
but not watery.
Yes, it was watery.
Oh, okay, last time you came on the show, you said you ate a cabbage soup that was so creamy you only have three bites.
In Lithuania.
Oh, okay. Again, I'm sorry.
Now, before 1991.
I'm confusing my cabbage soups.
I think you got cabbage in the years.
All right, Lee. Well.
Yeah.
We're not on the same page. I did think that you would choose intermittent fasting. That's why I was just pointing out to you like the restrictions. Because of all these, it is the best. I mean, it sucks that you can't eat when you wake up. But I do think you can get used to it. And then you can just eat whatever you want for dinner, you know?
Yeah, but why can't I just switch it around? Why can't I switch it around? What difference does it make?
Oh, my God. All right, never mind.
I don't understand why it has to be...
Because what is it? You go to 20 cities, 20 countries, play... So why is it... Well, why can't you just do 20 games in one country?
I don't understand how the hours work, though, in this. What difference does it make if it's from night until morning versus from afternoon until night?
Matt, you forgot that the biggest fight we've ever had on this show was between Lee and Skeets, and it was over breakfast.
Well, knowing that, what was it that Lee said breakfast was the most important meal or his favorite meal?
Favorite meal, for sure.
It was
right.
That
yeah. Lee that's was- why I'm giving him all these shitty options. Intermittent fasting is the one that's like, oh, well, at least I could still eat this dinner I want. And I knew that might cause him problems because he wouldn't be able to eat breakfast. And now he's trying to switch the whole thing around. So he's eating breakfast and lunch and sliding in a sensible, smaller dinner. Yeah. And I'm just saying that's not fasting.
Right.
And also, Lee, that would mean, where's your social life now? Because typically when I'm meeting my friends here, we're not going out for lunch. We're going out for dinner.
Right. Yeah. See, I can't handle the big dinner anymore. I can't handle a big meal. It just sits in your stomach. And remember when we used to go to Vegas We'd always go and have that big, fat, meaty meal. That was the
worst. Midnight.
Oh,
at midnight.
God, that was the worst.
I don't know. You seem to have a good time.
Yeah, you were loving it.
No, I didn't.
At the time.
No, I didn't. Well, maybe during the meal itself is more than just the meal. Yeah. But I remember going back to the bed, you know, the hotel room, just like, I cannot sleep. Your stomach is just like trying to work and, it was gross.
Yeah.
Gross.
Should I have included Ozempic as one of the options?
I don't know what that
is. It's not really a diet. That's more of a...
Well, it is. It's a medication. You don't know what that is?
No.
How long have you been gone for?
Ozempic.
Yeah, it's a diabetes medication that people are... celebrities are taking.
Yeah.
And lots of people.
More than just celebrities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Lee, before before you can promote yourself and your shirt finally.
Yes.
You've been on like, what, 10,000 miles of air travel. And I remember asking you last time, have you seen a film or a TV show that has come out in the last 3 years?
Yes.
You said no. You said the most you got was 30 minutes into Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that you've traveled thousands more miles, have you seen anything that's come out in the last 3 years?
I've seen the first three episodes of Succession.
Oh.
Oh, and?
I will not watch any more of it. I despise the characters. I absolutely despise them.
Okay.
And
that's fair. That's a fair criticism.
I mean, I see people raving about that as the greatest show, of all time. And I watch it and I said, I'll give myself as long as the flight takes. I was actually coming back from Mexico City and I'm like, all right, worth first one, second one. By the end of the third one, I was like, I hate
everybody. I do have to tell you that is almost everyone's experience with Succession.
Really?
They don't like it after it takes until the episode... I'm not going to spoil it, but the board vote, the first board vote where Kendall's got to run back, that's when it really locked in for me. I think you should, I was going to say,
how many episodes, let's be honest,
you're not going to.
You're close. I think you're close.
Yeah. I would watch the first season.
The thing is, I'll give them credit that I felt some emotion. You know, that's what it's about. Yeah. You know, you feel.
You don't need to, why do you need to like the characters?
Well,
them to be interesting characters.
But you know what I didn't
you're
like?
You're rooting
for
them.
Is just the greed and the obsession with money. I'm like,
yeah, but that's what it's about.
I know, but I'm like, that's just not me at all. Like,
The Sopranos, just the obsession with the killing and the.
I need to.
Breaking Bad, the obsession with the drug making.
I've realized like I'm more about tell me a story. Like tell me
it is a story. What are you talking about?
It's not.
It's a story about your countryman Rupert Murdoch, essentially.
No, it's an obsession with money that's like my God, let it go.
And how it poisons people and fucks people up.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
But that's what it is.
How much do you need?
That's the story.
Yeah, that's what I don't
relate to. What's interesting? These people that have so much and they still have problems.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't relate to that. I'm like. To chase the almighty greenback like that is like no man, do something else. You got that money, go and travel, enjoy yourself, man. Like, how much do you need?
All right. Well, speak of traveling, where can people find you? And what? How many more cities are you going to?
Well, I mean, various. I'll be in Berlin in about a month for the EuroLeague Final Four. Got a really exciting opportunity there to be a part of that telecast again 2 years in a row that I'm looking forward to. I'll be playing a game in Berlin at Mauer Park. Hopefully, if the court, which is being renovated right now, hopefully it'll be ready by the time I'm out there. Be back in Frankfurt at Huffen Park on Monday, May 27, where I actually stumbled into Huffen Park, the very first stop on this trip. I'll be back there playing with my man Moogly and Miguel Maria. She'll hopefully be out coming back for another one there. We're having a great night. Then I'll be in Vancouver. Matt, come up to Vancouver.
I don't know what the fuck he's talking about, just to be clear.
Come to Vancouver,
Huffen
Park in Frankfurt and Mauer Park in Berlin,
and
hopefully.
And who's your people that are going to be
there? My man,
there?
Moogly. Moogly. Moogly will be out there, hopefully, and Maria. Hopefully, will also be there, yeah.
Goddamn good, Harry Potter over here.
Yeah, Vancouver, May 31st, Matt, Kitsilano Beach. Why don't you come up for that? Okay. That's easy for you to get up there.
Yeah, but you've already played in Canada.
Yeah, but I'm not in Vancouver. Beautiful.
It's open up now, Matt. The 20 for 20 for 20 is done.
Okay. How are you? So at this point, how are you doing it? Because I think that for the 20 cities, you were like, I'll just do it, even if I'm not really making money, and I'll just see how it goes and what I and sponsorship. So I mean, I'm not looking for a dollar amount here, but is it Is this something that you're making money doing, or is it just sponsorships? Like they'll pay for your flight or something like that?
Bits and pieces of that, like some of that, you know. But what mostly happens is for one particular trip, like Brazil, there was some money coming in for that, but it sort of is only for that trip.
Right. EuroLeague. And, sorry, can I just ask, like, so what they're paying you for? What
quality? That's what they're.
No, what do you mean? So they're paying you what? To, in theory, to promote the country, like a tourism play?
I mean, being a part of it, showing off the country, playing, being involved. Gotcha. I mean, gotcha. You know.
So has the tourism board paid you?
Not yet, but you know, it's
not yet.
So you've invoiced them, and it hasn't, or
not yet. But look, that's a good segue because. What I'm looking for still is a strategic investment partner, and I've identified, you know, I get a lot of those like, hey man, can you promote our, you know, this affiliate commission stuff? No, don't want anything to do with that. It's not worth it. But what I'm looking for is where I think this really suits what I'm doing is, you know, credit card travel rewards program, like the Bank of America travel rewards program, fantastic program, Chase Sapphire. You know, Citibank.
So you want to partner with a credit card?
Yes, because they've all got these travel rewards programs, right? Which is exactly what I'm doing to show how valuable the card is, how it's accepted, foreign transaction fees. I've already got my pitch ready to go. Actually, I'm going to show it to JD afterwards to see if see what he thinks. But what I need is that contact. You know, that's the hardest part because in life, so many more things happen not because of what you know, but who you know. So I need that contact, Bank of America, someone in the marketing department.
So we need someone that works at Bank of America.
In the marketing department.
In the marketing.
No tellers. Tellers need not apply.
No. I need someone who I can talk to because I think, you know, like I say, this actually is really beneficial for them because there's so much competition between those, you know, between the credit cards. And, you know, I've got the proof of concept. Listen, I'm going. You know, so, you know, we're not.
But how long can you keep doing it, though, if the person from Chase Sapphire doesn't call you back?
Well, again, I mean, people bring me out to their cities and countries, and I'm obviously trying to monetize it. And, and you know, doing some work with EuroLeague as well helps. So, you know, there is money coming in. And obviously, for right now, I just need to sustain it. But like when you joined the Basketball Jones, I mean, you know, I would love to have someone who can help me. You know, really sort of take that next step. And that's what I'm trying to focus on now. Because the other brand, I'm just going to let them fly now. Why not? You might edit this out, but who knows? You know, Google Pixel, it's a fantastic opportunity shoot it on.
I thought you were going to tell me it's a fantastic phone.
It's a great phone, Matt, with a great camera. It's a great camera, right? And...
Tim Apple, if you're listening, he also loves the iPhone. He also loves such phones Samsung Galaxy.
Yeah, Motorola. I mean, again,
these are all good phones.
They're all great, and they're
the
in
Razor.
Such, they're in such great competition with each other. Like the video that I like to use is my recap video from last year, where I sort of told the story of all the countries I went to, and I say, look how well shot this was on a beautiful Samsung Galaxy or a Google Pixel. The Google Pixel,
You're moving so fast on the court and it could catch.
Well, you know, but the Google, you can turn it around. You can shoot it both ways. If you have two people there, you can get multiple angles. And then editing is so easy on those phones as well. So,
Do you have a pen, by the way, on you right now?
No.
I got a number for you. 1-800-432-1000. I just Googled. That's Bank of America Customer Service. So what you're going to want is you're going to call.
No, but see, Matt,
press
this is
4
thing.
For the marketing department.
I need somebody who's listening to say, oh, I know somebody. Call them. Here's an email. Hey. Get in touch with them. That's what's going to change it because I need to make that pitch, right? Mm-hmm. And again, part of when I was in Brazil, for example, is I was preparing this pitch because I think it really sells what I'm trying to do to get somebody on board. I don't want just like someone to say, hey, we'll sponsor this or that or whatever. You know, if you have a strategic partner like a travel rewards program, there's something that they want out of it as well and what they want to show. And so that's where it can be really mutually beneficial, not just like, hey, I want it because I need it. It's like, this will help you attract business and customers. So, you know, I'm practicing, man.
Data.
In the mirror.
Analytics.
Yeah.
What about, just out of curiosity, before we go, did absence from the NBA make the heart grow fonder? Because I've noticed that you're sometimes you're at NBA games inserting yourself into locker rooms.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, because it's not that I don't love the game. I still love the game, but I don't miss, you know, the Tuesday night watching, you know, Hornets and the Wizards.
He can't even name two teams.
but what I'm sort of seeing again now is how it's expanding and growing for me to be able to, like, okay, there's a story to be told here. Like when I spoke to Nikola Jokic about, hey, let's try to get an NBA game out in Serbia, a preseason game. Talk to someone like him, get him to be like, yeah, that'd be awesome. That helps to generate interest and potentially. Now, I know these things are not, you know, not easily going to happen, but maybe it will happen if there's a bit more interest. When I went to the Giannis court, I thought, why don't I just go and ask Giannis about it? And so I did, and I spoke to him. You know,
but now you're doing the thing. Remember when we used to go to All-Star Weekend and we used to do those big scrums, you know, on Media Day?
Yeah.
And we used to notice that all anyone wanted to know was like a thing that they could print in their publication that is specific. So like basically what I'm saying is like all the Chinese press would just be like asking everyone like, hey, would you like to come play a game in China? And then all the players be like, oh, I love China. I have so many fans there. Now that's what you're doing. You're going to all these players and being like, Luka, here, why don't we play on your court?
And
Jokic,
you know,
why don't we play on your court?
When I spoke to Luka about it, I mean, his response was really, it felt energized, you know, because it wasn't just like, hey, man, you know, what happened out there? Well, he had 73 that night, actually. But, you know, and so Giannis, so I was saying to JD off camera.
But enough about that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about me for a little bit here. Okay, yeah.
Let's talk about me and Chase Sapphire Rewards.
Yeah, we'll start with Bank of America Travel Rewards card. That's my main focus. I mean, not limited to, but that's where I'm aiming for.
And Wells Fargo, is that? I haven't heard you mention them.
Yes, of course. Anyone's really. I mean, I shouldn't say this, but Amex have got to sort themselves out, man. They still can't.
Okay,
they're just
no,
not accepted
it.
Everywhere,
preach,
man.
Buddy. Amex has got to. Well, you use an Amex. You don't have an Amex?
No, I do have it here. It's fine in America.
When you're overseas, nobody takes it. It's too expensive.
No, that's true.
It's too expensive for the vendors.
And that's the Amex still charge you for every foreign transaction fee that you do. So on the chances that you do get one, they hit you with a fee. And it's like, come on, man. Bank of America Travel Rewards do not charge you for every transaction, which is a huge difference. You know, so you don't come home. It might only be a dollar at a time, but if you have 20 transactions, it adds up.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what are we talking about?
Diners Club.
Oh,
get
yeah,
at my
yeah,
man
yeah.
Lee.
But, you know, so for example, the Giannis thing, I went and spoke to Giannis, and I don't know if you've seen that, maybe you have, but he talked about Allen Iverson, you know, and that was the first player he tried to be like, you know, so... When Denver Nuggets, Allen Iverson, so around 2005 or something like that, I guess. And so what I've done is I've actually then thought, you know what? I'll see if I can get in touch with Allen Iverson to say, hey, Giannis would love to have you out in Athens. So I'm actually having a call with somebody, not Allen Iverson, who you know, works with Allen Iverson tomorrow to see if I can pitch them on and say, hey, let's make this happen. I mean, that'd be... Imagine that happens, you know.
But did Giannis deputize you to do this? What if Allen Iverson shows up and now you're like, Giannis, you got to go meet AI on the court?
Giannis,
ask you to do that, man.
Yeah,
I'm busy.
Of course he did.
I love Milwaukee. I'm not going back.
That's where I'm like, I'll just listen. First step is like, if I can get Allen Iverson's ear and say, would you do this? And he says yes, then it's like, all right, let's see what we can do.
Have you tried using ChatGPT?
No.
Because that's AI.
Nice. It's the same with Charles Barkley when I went on the podcast with him and I said, let's go to Australia. And he said, yes. And he won't answer the phone.
And are you holding him to that? When are you going?
I am. Well, listen, Charles wants to go. Charles said he wants to go.
We all want to go.
Charles won't answer the phone. But that's the thing. It's like, okay... Just because he's not going now doesn't mean he won't answer the phone ever.
That's right. Just keep calling.
And I've got people in Australia who've lined up and said, listen, man, we'll write the check. The check is sort of ready in our hand. Just tell us how much he needs and we'll make it happen. And I'm like, all right, I'm messaging him, I'm calling him, and, you know, we'll see if it happens. It might not happen, you know, for a year or two, but I certainly...
Tell him to write that check and I'll come.
Matt, go anyway. You'll have a great time.
Yeah.
And especially from Los Angeles, you can get a really good deal if you go at the right time.
Especially with Chase Sapphire Rewards.
Well, that's right. Because, you know, Matt, I need three things when I travel. A basketball, my passport, and a credit card that I can trust and rely that I know.
I almost wonder if this should have been you doing your PowerPoint presentation and us just interrupting you as you're doing it.
Well, I can do it if you want because, you know, that's part of it. That's how it starts. You know,
JD's got to go pick up his kid at school, so we got to end this thing. Remember to check us out, patreon.com/isthisgood. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have topics, email us at isthisgoodpod@gmail.com. Rate us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on YouTube. Lee, I'll give you 10 seconds to say whatever you want before I say goodbye. Just want to make sure you've done everything you needed to do here.
Bank of America, contact me.
Okay. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Lee for coming on. Thanks in advance for leaving a 5-star review for everyone. I'm Matt Austin, and this was good. We'll see you next week.